मेहंदी है रचने वाली, हाथों में गहरी लाली, कह सखिया अब कलिया हाथों में खिलने वाली है, तेरे मन को जीवन को नई खुशियाँ मिलने वाली है। मेहंदी है रचने वाली, हाथों में गहरी लाली, कह सखिया अब कलिया हाथों में खिलने वाली है, तेरे मन को जीवन को नई खुशियाँ मिलने वाली है।
I'm interviewing Polly Hyman, who has just returned from Afghanistan to England. How long have you been in Afghanistan?
Well, I first went to Afghanistan in October of last year, October 2002. So I've been there for about 6 months now, and I'll be working on the job I'm doing there at the moment until probably September of this year.
Right, and the job is training women in video.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
I'm working for an NGO in Kabul, which is called AINA, which is really the sort of hub of independent press in Afghanistan and independent media in general. The aim of the NGO is to create and promote independent media and freedom of the press. And I'm working there in the video department, training Afghan camera women. There's 14 Afghan camera women who are training there, and it's a one-year course. The course started in July 2002 and will probably end in August 2003. And part of the training really is not only in camera skills, but also training as video journalists, as editors, as script writers, to give them all-round skills in production.
Presumably this will be a step into media production, being able to report on things, or to make feature films or short films?
I think at the moment their options are open, really. Our main aim of the course is to give them all-round skills in video production. And what that's involved so far is the very beginning of the course, technical training with the cameras. We're training on DV cameras, Sony PD150s. And their first production that they worked on were four news reports for French TV. But they were news reports with a difference, because they were actually made by Afghan women. And about various different subjects, one about an area north of Kabul known as Shamali Plains, where there was a big massacre and where people really have suffered a lot. Another one about street children, another one about the women's prison, and so on. And since then, they've just completed their first one-hour documentary film, which is their journey around Afghanistan and interviewing women they meet on their journey. And it's really quite an amazing film. It's the first film made by Afghan camera women, and it's really the first film about Afghan women made by Afghan women.
Yeah. Has that film been released?
It's been shown at two festivals, one in France, one in Germany, and I think we'll continue on the festival circuit for the next few months, and hopefully will be broadcast on TV as well.
Yeah. So what's going to happen next with the project?
Well, they've just completed their first film, and what we're doing now is starting production on their second film. We've done lots of research into women's rights in Afghanistan, and the second film, again, will be a one-hour documentary about women's rights. And again, they will be travelling throughout the country, this time to different regions, and they will be exploring the issue of women's rights, which actually is a very controversial and huge subject, but something that I think can only be tackled by Afghan women.
I mean, in the West, all you hear or all you've heard is the treatment by the Taliban. Presumably, treatment of women and women's conditions have got better. But how much, what kind of changes have been made since the war?
I think they have improved, but only in certain parts of the country. For example, in Kabul, women are now working again. They're back in schools, they're back at the universities. Not all, but some. And also you see women without the burqa. And the burqa is something that's received a lot of media attention, and it seems to be the sort of the plight of Afghan women, the burqa. But actually it's a very small factor in their struggles for equality, really. Mm. And so in Kabul, things are improving slowly, not for everybody, depending on family situations, but in Kabul, they are improving. Outside of Kabul, it's a different story. And I think, I'm cautiously optimistic about the future in Afghanistan, but I think there's still a lot of changes to be made. And I think really it's fair to say outside of Kabul that women's lives and men's lives as well haven't really changed that much. And in some regions, actually, things have become worse.
You did mention earlier that you were going to be travelling, but that had to be put off because of fighting. Can you tell us where you were going to be travelling?
We were planning to go to Maimonar, which is just near Mazar in the north, but unfortunately fighting broke out between Dostum and one of Rabbani's parties out there, and we had to call that off and delay it. We hope to go back there in the future.
The conditions outside of Kabul, we haven't heard anything in the Western press, and even Indian media hasn't heard a lot about the conditions there. Presumably Kabul is fairly steady situation. What about the rest of the country?
Kabul does have stability, and that's mainly because Karzai obviously is based in Kabul, and you have the International Security Assistance Force there, ISAF, who really are keeping the peace. But even in Kabul you have rocket attacks, you have bombs, you have explosions. Outside of Kabul I'd say it's really unstable. For example, one thing that wasn't really it was mentioned in the press but not much is that on the day that the war started with Iraq, in Kandahar in the south of Afghanistan, on the same day that war broke out with Iraq, 1,000 US troops started fighting in Kandahar on the quest for Al-Qaeda. And that's something to me that seemed to be strategically planned, really, so that there'd be less media attention. But there's lots of fighting all over the country and there's instability. And really, Karzai is the president of Afghanistan, but really only within Kabul.
Right. And presumably if there's fighting, there's casualties.
Yes, there's lots of casualties. I'm not sure of how many casualties, but yes, there definitely have been Afghan casualties and international casualties as well.
Right. And a lot of the civilian population, have they been caught up in the fighting there?
I think civilians are always caught up in fighting in every way, right? Whether it be through fatalities or injuries or just through life conditions and the way in which they're living, struggling for money, struggling for work, struggling for food, education, all of that, they're definitely caught up in it.
And the political situation, I mean, you mentioned the president, who is only the president of Kabul, but the rest of the country, what's that like?
Well, there's lots of... throughout Afghanistan, there's warlords, and each province really has a warlord that's governing it. And so it can be seen that throughout Afghanistan, Karzai is seen as the president, but really he has no control. And one of the main things that happened through the overturn of the Taliban and the downfall of the Taliban when the Americans invaded is that they also funded various warlords and gave them financial backing to help in the fight against the Taliban, which now leaves Afghanistan in a very difficult situation because you have warlords who have a lot of money. And through that money, they've been able to create their own private armies, increase their private armies, and increase the amount of weapons that they have. So now the program of disarmament has begun. Karzai wants to disarm the country, and the Karzai government want to disarm the country. But it's actually a very difficult process. How do you get the warlords to disarm? How do you get the men, their armies, to disarm when they have no incentive to? There can't only be a financial incentive. They have to try and provide jobs for the people who are actually now within working with the warlords. But it's not; it's a very complex situation. It will take many, many years if it happens at all.
Yeah. So things really haven't changed that much.
This is just my opinion. I think in Kabul I can see definite changes. Outside of Kabul, for example, one place, Bamiyan, which is famous in the press because the Buddhas were blown up there by the Taliban. Mm. And now... for example, the Japanese want to invest millions of dollars to reconstruct the Buddhas. But if you go to Bamiyan, you see there are hundreds of people living in caves there. And to me, this is something that shouldn't be happening in modern times, in modern day. It's something that's prehistoric.
Yeah.
And how can you even consider reconstructing Buddhas when you have people living in caves?
And what kind of positive things have come out of the war?
I think there have been changes, but I think it's on a very small scale. I think people, women in particular, are having the opportunity to be educated more than they were under the Taliban. But it's going to take a long, long time, and it's going to be a very slow process. I can't see anything happening overnight, and I think that's normal as well, considering that there's been 23 years of war in Afghanistan. And I think it's something that cannot be rushed and shouldn't be rushed. But the one thing that's important is that Afghanistan continues to get funding from the international community. At the moment, it's not receiving enough. and if that falls, then it will be devastating for the country. At the moment, as far as I understand it, it's $1 billion that's been received from the international community. If you compare that with the fact that America alone gives Israel $3 billion a year, then you see that really it's nothing.
Yeah. And what about the infrastructure? I mean, I guess in Kabul there's electricity and water, but outside of Kabul, or even in Kabul, is there in all places?
In Kabul, again, there's beginning to be electricity more frequently and water, but still the majority of people, Afghans living there, have no electricity and have no water.
Right.
If they have water, they get it from wells, but a lot of the wells, because of the years of drought there, dried up. Electricity is more frequent now, but usually just for a few hours a day. In summer, it's not so important. In winter, it's crucial.
Yeah.
I think outside of Kabul, there's not really... It depends on where you're looking at, but really the situation... The infrastructure has been completely destroyed, and this, again, is something that has to be rebuilt. Everything there has to be rebuilt.
When you say everything, you mean water supplies, electricity, schools?
I mean, absolutely everything.
Schools,
and also,
hospitals?
I think the priority should be people. And I think one of the things that's happened there is that women in particular, but also men, have lost their dignity, have lost their confidence. And this really is very important, that people start living as human beings again there.
Yeah.
And that's something that can only be done with help and support, and continued help and support. And the one thing that struck me about the war with Iraq, the attitude of Afghans in Kabul anyway, is that they were worried that Afghanistan would be forgotten about again.
Yeah.
And that's something that has to really be remembered, and why Afghanistan should be remembered in the media, in every way, by people all over the world.
In the Western press, most of what you hear about Afghanis is the people who try to come to England. But are there many people who are returning to Afghanistan to help rebuild?
There are millions of people who have gone back to Afghanistan. In terms of refugees who have returned, I think the estimated figure is about 1.7 million people who came back from Pakistan and Iran, mainly, in the last year and a half, 2 years. Outside of that, people coming back from America, from Europe, there's lots of people coming back who have received a very good education abroad and are coming back to help reconstruct the country. Often these people are either working in ministries or for the United Nations, for NGOs, or working as private businessmen on private projects. But there are a lot of people coming back. And I think it's not always easy for people who come back, in particular for people, for example, families who come back from Pakistan or Iran, who come back hoping for a better future, come back to Kabul, for example, hoping to find work, to find employment, and to find somewhere to live and to really make a good life for their family. They get there and there's nothing, and they're left stranded because house prices in Kabul have rocketed, and they're left in a very difficult situation. For people who've come back, maybe who are a bit wealthier with money... For people who've come back from Europe or America, for example, who are in a completely different situation and come back to help through their education, they also find it difficult, I think, and I've been told this, because often their families are not in Afghanistan. Their families are left either in America or Europe, so it's difficult for them as well. And also they're returning to a country that maybe they haven't seen for 10, 15, 23 years, that's been completely devastated, and it's not the country or the homeland they once knew. Well, I'm based in Kabul. I have travelled outside of Kabul, but mainly I'm based in Kabul, and so I really see what's happening there, and I see some fantastic initiatives that are happening there, NGOs that have been set up that are working on fantastic projects, building hospitals, building schools, and most of all, most important of all, education, literacy classes, small organisations training lawyers again, or retraining lawyers and judges to get people back into the system, in particular women as well. And there's lots of fantastic projects and initiatives in Kabul, but it needs to continue like that. It can't stop now. It's really something that needs to continue for the future.
Yeah.
In terms of healthcare, it has one of the highest mortality. Afghanistan. In terms of healthcare, Afghanistan has one of the highest mortality rates in the world in terms of maternity care and maternity women having babies. And this is something that really can't be overlooked. It's something that has to be dealt with. One of the biggest problems also is landmines. It's the most heavily One of the biggest problems also is landmines. It's one of the most heavily mined countries in the world. One of the statistics I've read is that it will take at least 100 years to clear all the mines in Afghanistan.
Wow. And they're just everywhere, or
they're
anywhere?
They're everywhere. They've been cleared pretty much in most parts of Kabul, but you still see, for example, at the airport is completely full of landmines, and it will take a very long time to clean everything up. But you still have landmine explosions that go off in Kabul, where a landmine is found, nobody knew it was there. But there's lots of casualties from landmines all over the country, and it's a big problem.
Yeah.
One of the projects we're doing at Aina is a mobile cinema. And on this mobile cinema, we make educational films, and one of the films we've made is about landmines and landmine awareness. And this mobile cinema is taken throughout the country and shown to villages all over the country, and it's just become permanent. So hopefully, through education and awareness, not only landmines, but for, you know, the importance of maternity health care, the importance of education for girls, slowly people's attitudes, opinions, the way that they live can change.
And the shows that you mentioned, they're taken around Afghanistan. Are there other initiatives like that for education?
The mobile cinema is the only initiative like this in the country at the moment. Hopefully there will be more initiatives like that, but at the moment this is the only one. There are other NGOs that, for example, take videos to schools and show educational films at schools, which again is a great thing to do and very, very important.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's much easier to show a video than to talk, especially if you don't have the language.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. I'll say the mobile cinema, all the films are made, they're actually made with Afghan Films and Aina, and all the films are written, filmed, directed, produced by Afghans for an Afghan audience.
If you want to say a bit more about the filmmaking and the films that the Afghani women have made.
The documentary film that the girls have just completed is really an amazing and unusual film because it's their first experiences of their own country. It's their journey around Afghanistan. The majority of them had never left Kabul before. And although they also were leading difficult lives in Kabul, they had no idea what was happening outside of Kabul in other parts of the country. And so they travelled around Afghanistan and spoke to people along the way and really found out not only what happened in the past, but how people are living now. For example, they travelled with the Kuchi nomads in Jalalabad, really on the border with Pakistan, and spoke to women there and families there. They visited Bamiyan and the women living in the caves and the children living there. They visited Herat and interviewed people there. They really travelled all over the country. This film really is unique, and there's never been a film like it before. It's been made for an international market. It's not going to be shown within Afghanistan because at the moment, really, the situation is too sensitive, and the film is really quite controversial, too controversial to be shown in Afghanistan at the moment. But we hope that in the future, the work of the camera women will be able to be shown in Afghanistan.
And did you accompany the women when they went to various places outside of Kabul?
For this film, I didn't accompany them on the film. There was another woman working there who did that. I was mainly based in Kabul, working on their technical skills and training with the girls who weren't travelling for the film.
So how many women are you training altogether?
There's 14 camera women on the course at Aina, and they'll all be training for 1 year by the end of the course.
Right. And that's training in editing skills and script writing and camera?
Yeah, what we're trying to do is give all-round skills for the camera women. So really, initially they were being trained as camera women, but now they're also receiving classes in producing skills, script writing skills, editing on Avid and Final Cut Pro. Really all-round skills, so that by the end of the course they will be able to work independently and achieve a sustainable living from what they've learned.
Is there a market for a film in Afghanistan? Is there a TV station there?
There's definitely a TV market in Afghanistan. The national TV networks are up and running again. Each province has a regional TV network. So, for example, in Kabul, it's Kabul TV. The sort of programmes that the girls are making at the moment are really more aimed at the international market. In the future, at the end of the course, some of the girls will be establishing an independent production company, and they will be working mainly with the international market, but also we hope that they will have work with the national market, also through NGOs out there, and probably within the advertising market as well.
Right. So the training is hopefully to get people up and running and into a trade?
The main aim of the training is that the camera women are able to make a sustainable living from what they've learned. And we're not at the moment planning to run any more training courses when this one finishes, because we want to make sure and guarantee that these girls are able to make their livelihood from this. We're very positive that this will be a success. Afghanistan has never really had Afghan camera women in this way before, so obviously it hasn't been tried before. So when the girls establish their own production company, really it's a big challenge, and it's something innovative that hasn't been done before, but I'm sure it will be a success.
Right. How did you find the 14 women?
In July 2002, the camera women started the course. The girls who were on the course were found really through word of mouth. The course wasn't advertised, because then it was seen as being too sensitive really to advertise. And so through word of mouth, word got around and girls came to be interviewed for the training course. And I think there were several hundred applicants, and out of that they interviewed several candidates and chose the women.
Yeah.
Obviously in Afghanistan there's many restrictions, in particular within families, and so for these women to decide to become camera women and attend the camera training course is really quite a brave and courageous thing to do. Within society there are still lots of hesitations and restrictions really on the role of women, and so for women to be training as camera women is really very unusual. These camera women are very, very brave, and just attending the course they're showing their courage. Because there are still people in Afghan society who don't believe that women should be working or that women should be trained as camera women. And they're lucky in many ways because they have the understanding and support of their families who have backed them throughout the course.
Yeah. And your own filmmaking, you said you were making some films in Kabul?
Yeah. I initially went out to Kabul in October 2002 with a friend of mine who was going out there to visit her husband, who's Afghan. And I went out there to make a documentary about one of the ministries. And this is just an independent project I was doing. I work in TV in London. And so I went out there with my camera and started filming. And while I was there, I heard about AINA, the NGO, and ended up working at AINA.
Right. And have you made this film?
The film that I made out there has been shot completely, but I haven't been able to edit it yet. So that's something I'll have to work on probably in September when this project is finished.
Right. You were talking about wanting to make a film about Kabul cab drivers. Is that right?
Yes, I've done that as well. That's something else that I shot. I noticed when I first started taking taxis in Kabul, first of all, that there's a lot of taxis in Kabul, over 40,000. And also I noticed that every taxi journey I took was an amazing experience, and that the drivers were very interesting, often refugees who've returned. Some of them are cab drivers who've worked there for, you know, 40 years as cab drivers in their old battered cars. And so I started talking to them, and I liked what they were saying. And so I did start filming the taxi drivers, and that's another film that I hope to edit in September.
Great. Good luck.
When I first went to Afghanistan in October of last year, it was the first time that I'd ever visited Afghanistan, and it was the first time that I'd ever visited a country, a war-torn country like that. For me, it was a really sad experience to see the total devastation in Kabul. Everything, most things, are destroyed. That was shocking. I've never seen a place like that. But what is also amazing for me now that I've stayed there and I've been there for 6 months, is to see that things are changing. The buildings are being rebuilt, roads are changing, street lamps have gone up. Slowly, things are changing there, and that's fantastic to see as well. But the main thing to remember is that it continues. I continue to work in Afghanistan rather than coming back to work in TV in London, because for me, it's a challenge. And also, it's amazing to see the changes in the people, just small things, their confidence grow, the people that I'm working with, the girls that I'm training, the changes within them, the confidence growing, becoming more opinionated, not being afraid to express their opinions, and really seeing in them that they believe that their lives can become better and they can have a better future. For me, that's really important.
Yeah. What kind of age group are the women you're training?
There's quite a wide age. It's quite a wide ranging age group, ranging from 18 to mid 30s.
Yeah.
And the camera women come from many different backgrounds. One of them is married, the others are living at home still. Some of them have been to university, some of them are still in high school, some of them are working. I think perhaps out of the 14 camera women, not all of them will go on to be camera women or to work in TV or film. But I think the most important thing about the course is that they grow in confidence and that they have an amazing experience, one that they'll never forget. Through the first film, two of the camera women have travelled to Europe as part of the promotion for the film at festivals. And for them, if you can imagine, it's the first time they've ever left Afghanistan. For them, it's really important, I think, to see other parts of the world and to see that not everywhere is like Afghanistan.
I think we've come to the end of the interview. And would you like to give us the website address?
The website address is www.ainaworld.org. And Aina is A-I-N-A.
Great. Thanks very much, Polly.
सावन के झूले वो हंसना वो हंसाना वो रूठ के फिर मनाना
वो हाँ।
जीवन में कुछ भी नहीं 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 कुछ भी नहीं
ना हूं ना हूं ना हूं ना हूं ना हूं ना
हमेशा तुमको चाहा और चाहा चाहा चाहा
ना हूं